7 minutes after 7 o'clock. Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Well, today is Earth Day, and this hour we're going to talk about the findings of the 2011 Wisconsin Public Radio St. Norbert College, Wisconsin survey on wind energy, and welcome your thoughts on how big a role wind power should play in our state's future. So do you think wind power is a viable energy alternative in Wisconsin? Well, this is your hour to call in and let us know that. Or should we keep our focus on the more traditional fossil fuels? That viewpoint is welcome as well. A couple other things to consider. How has the crisis in Japan changed, if at all, your thinking about nuclear power? All those things are worthy of our discussion here this hour. A couple of guests we're going to start with: Wendy Scattergood, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the St. Norbert College Survey Center. Wendy, good morning again.
Good morning.
Good to talk to you. Were there any big surprises in the responses you got on this question about energy?
On the energy mix question, when we asked, do you think we should increase, decrease, or stay the same for different kinds of electricity sources, I was surprised that the number one thing that came out was wind. Actually, 77% said that we should actually increase the use of wind, followed by hydroelectric, 60% said we should increase that. And then biomass came in at number three, 54% think that we should increase our use of biomass.
Were there any follow-up questions that would give you a clue as to why these percentages were like this?
Well, we asked for these kinds of alternative energies what are sort of valid arguments about why we should support them, and all of them came in at very, very high percentages of validity, and that is the decrease in reliance on foreign oil, which is a bit spurious, but decrease on reliance on coal and natural gas, 82% that said that was a good reason for increasing alternative energies. 89% said that it will help the environment, and 77% that it will actually increase jobs in Wisconsin.
Now, I was wondering, those who really indicated a support for wind power, for example, how many, what percentage of those people lived anywhere near a wind farm?
Mm-hmm. Well, when we asked in general, do you live near one? And what we found was that only about 18% said that they actually live near a wind farm. So not that many of them. When I looked at that, just at that group themselves and how did they actually feel about it, they were split right down the middle between favoring and opposing wind energy on the various different questions of supporting wind energy.
Now, there is a debate in the state about the siting of wind machines, and some say that those decisions ought to remain local, and some say the state ought to be the one to decide. How did people respond on that issue?
Yes, 61% said that it should stay at the local level. 35% said that it should be moved to the state level, and 4% were unsure. And again, when I broke that down by those who actually had wind machines in their area, those who think we should increase wind, there really was no difference between those folks and how they felt about the siting decisions.
Mm. And I noticed that more than three-quarters of the respondents thought it would be a good idea to put wind machines offshore in Lake Michigan.
Yeah, 79% said that they would support offshore. And even those who said that they actually wanted to decrease the amount of wind in that first question, 50% of those actually said that they would favor offshore wind.
Interesting.
Which we asked later, yeah.
Yeah, are we willing to pay more for alternative energy sources?
Yes, actually. We asked a series of questions, what we call the willingness to pay questions, and kind of asked people how far were they willing to go. And 68% said that they'd be willing to pay at least $2 a month more on their electricity bill. The majority, where it kind of We still have a majority is actually at $5 a month on their electricity bills. After that, it starts to drop off pretty quickly.
So we're willing to pay some, just maybe not a lot.
Not a lot, but when you add up all the electricity consumers around the state, $5 a month is
a lot
of money.
$5.
Yeah.
Okay. $5 here, $5 there. Pretty soon you're talking real money.
Yeah.
Here's what I found particularly interesting. You asked a question. From what you've read and heard, is there solid evidence that the average temperature on Earth has been getting warmer over the past four decades? We're fairly evenly split in a way on that. It's 51 to 42, but 42% say there's no solid evidence that this is happening.
Right, and that's pretty typical. We see that with a lot of the national polls as well, and there's a pretty significant difference between party identification. So, for example, 74% of Democrats think that there is enough evidence compared to 66% of Republicans think there is not. And then the independents, as usual, right in the middle, 51% think there is, 43% think there is not. There also is somewhat of an education issue there, that the more education a person has, the more likely they are to say that there is solid evidence.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, let's talk about nuclear power for a moment. In light of what happened in Japan, are we concerned about something similar to that happening in Wisconsin, do you think?
Well, it's pretty well spread out in terms of responses. We asked how concerned were they, and so you could answer very concerned, somewhat concerned, not too concerned, or not at all concerned. And 16% were very concerned, 31 somewhat, 32 not too, and 21 not at all. So if you look at sort of the balance of those, of not very concerned to not at all, is 53%. So the majority don't have too much concern, but there's still 47% that are somewhat or very concerned. And as you said, we are certainly asking these questions, right, when the news of Japan is out there.
Yeah, what's going on over at Fukushima plant is really something, and it continues to make news.
Mm-hmm.
Wendy Scattergood, thanks for joining us. By the way, we've linked all this polling data on the WPR.org program notes page and from the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, so you can go there and look at the survey results about wind energy. And by the way, Wendy, you're going to be on for the entire hour on Monday from 6 to 7 to talk about the collective bargaining part of the survey, right?
Yes, very interesting results there.
Okay, great. Well, that'll be you and Joy. That hour on Monday, I'll be on the road, so I'll be listening in my car as I'm driving to Madison that day. Thanks, thanks for joining me this morning, and appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Wendy Scattergood is Assistant Professor of Political Science at St. Norbert College Survey Center, and she joined us yesterday, and she'll be back next week as well to talk more about the results of our Wisconsin survey for spring 2011. And again, this polling data is linked to the WPR.org program notes page and from the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, so you can go there and take a look at it. Now, I want to throw out I'd like to ask for some participation from you, the listener, this morning on this Earth Day. I think it's appropriate that we're talking about wind energy on Earth Day. Do you think that wind power is a viable energy alternative in Wisconsin, or should we keep our focus on something more traditional? How has the crisis in Japan made you feel about our investment in nuclear power? How do you feel about the siting of wind turbines in Wisconsin? Should communities handle this, or should this be regulated by the state? And there may be a lot of other things that you might think of that we should be talking about. Here's the phone number and how you can get involved. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. And you can also leave a message on the Joy Cardine Facebook page. All right. When we come back, we will talk with Michael Kraft, professor of public and environmental affairs at UW-Green Bay, about all of this, how we feel about alternative energy sources here in Wisconsin, and hopefully with you if you want to join us by phone. Again, that number, 800-642-1234. Well, grab the bumper chute as you head out the door today. It'll be cloudy with rain likely, possibly mixed with snow in the north in the morning, and a chance for thunderstorms in the south in the afternoon. Temperatures around 50 in the northwest, but cooler near Lake Michigan. Periods of rain in the south with possible thunderstorms tonight. Rain is likely in the north, and snow mixed in the north with possible accumulations of 1 to 3 inches. That is not what I want to see in the April 22nd forecast, but there it is. Overcast skies this morning all across Wisconsin. A lot of 39s here. 39 in Green Bay, Oshkosh, Eau Claire, and Milwaukee. 37 in Wausau, 38 in Superior, 41 in La Crosse, and in Madison, 43 degrees and overcast. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 7:19, you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's what's coming up a little bit later on today. Talk of the Nation Science Friday after 1. Join Ira Flatow on Science Friday for a conversation on the highs and lows of the space shuttle program and the uncertain future of spaceflight for humans. That's Talk of the Nation Science Friday after 1 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour we're talking about wind energy on this Earth Day, the results of the Wisconsin Public Radio St. Norbert survey, St. Norbert College survey, indicates that we favor wind energy here in Wisconsin. So we'll spend the rest of this hour talking about that with Michael Kraft, professor of public and environmental affairs at UW-Green Bay. Professor Kraft, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining me.
Happy to be here.
So the polling data suggests that we like wind energy. Did anything about this surprise you about how we feel about wind?
Well, I was a little surprised that, as Wendy Scattergood said, that the wind power had the strongest endorsement of all the possible sources of energy for producing electricity. A little surprised that hydroelectric was second after wind, since we don't rely very much on hydroelectric. But what I take from this, and it's especially appropriate on Earth Day 2011, is that there's a strong public support for alternative energy sources. Now, some skepticism, as Wendy said, about additional nuclear power, and a lot of negative reaction to the traditional sources of energy, such as coal. And really, wind is, in Wisconsin, wind would really be competing with coal-fired power plants. And so the public indicates a fair amount of support for wind, and even support when they have to pay some of the costs, and support even when the wind turbines might be located close by to people, which is a different conclusion than one might have drawn from a lot of the news accounts of protests over wind power in the state.
Well, what makes wind more attractive than the other forms of alternative energy like hydro or biomass or even some of the more traditional things like nuclear? What is it about wind that we like so much?
Well, I think the public sees wind as a clean energy source. Of course, that would be true also of hydro and biomass. I think wind turbines are becoming more acceptable. People understand how they're constructed and operate, and I think there are enough wind turbines around the country and around the state that I think you would see growing acceptance of that. Plus, it's hard to tell how many people read this into their support for wind power, but wind turbines can be locally produced and therefore help the economy, help economic growth, create jobs. And indeed, we saw a reaction because of the confusion and disagreement over state wind regulation over the siting of wind turbines, that one of the big developers for wind power is actually leaving the state of Wisconsin and therefore hurting the economy and possibly costing us jobs. And maybe that can be reversed if the state is more definitive on the rules for siting wind turbines. But because of the uncertainty in the state legislature, at least one company announced it was pulling the plug on its planned wind farm. That was in late March.
Well, as I expected, all of our phone lines are buzzing right now.
Right.
So let's take some calls and get some folks involved in the discussion. Peter in Kenosha, we will start with you. Good morning. Thank you for tuning in today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on. Well, what I'd like to comment on is that our coal plants can be converted to natural gas, and I would like to say, along with the program, I'm very much for wind farms, but a lot of people don't realize that our coal, most of it gets trained in from Montana. Diesel-powered train runs it across the country, gets it to our coal plants, and then we burn it, even though we have coal, like, say, in Illinois, for example, but the sulfur content is too high. Our plants, as they sit, can be converted to natural gas, and we've got more than enough of it in the country to go a very long time. Along another line with the wind farms, there's been some controversy. I think it was either Port Washington or maybe a little further north. There was a development and quite a few people against the wind farm there, citing all sorts of things like groundwater pollution and things that really didn't make sense. And I think if people really stop and realize just what it takes to use what they have right now and what we're doing, that wind is an excellent alternative or substitute, as well as natural gas for our vehicles to go down the road. We're also using something called biogas. In Dane County, right there at the landfill, they convert the methane from the landfill and use it in vehicles right at the landfill. This is also going on in Appleton. You can convert sewage to the biogas, which pretty much it all comes out to be like the natural gas that comes out of your stove. So if people take a look at that, we're like the Saudi Arabia of natural gas. We have all we need to do everything we need, and we can keep all the money in-house.
Peter, thanks for the call. Professor?
Well, I think Peter makes a number of good points there. Natural gas is a lot cleaner. Converting coal-fired power plants to natural gas would make them cleaner. He also indicates that wind might be a very good alternative, and, of course, we can tap landfills for methane, which is natural gas. I would say natural gas is not as clean as wind. Natural gas, of course, has to be produced, and currently we're producing a lot of natural gas around the country, but we're doing so through a process that can contaminate groundwater and cause other environmental problems through release of toxic chemicals, which gas-producing companies inject particularly into shale formations to create the natural gas. So that's controversial as well. Plus, of course, natural gas is a fossil fuel. So one reason not to rely so much on coal and natural gas for producing electricity is that it contributes to greenhouse gas releases, carbon dioxide, and that is an attraction of the other alternative energy sources, particularly solar and wind. But I think the larger point is we need a variety of sources. I don't think anybody's suggesting we cancel all coal-fired power plants or retire them or that we stop producing nuclear power. What we need to do is think of a range of alternatives and start moving towards those that are most technologically feasible and cost-effective so that we're not, and I think the St. Norbert College survey showed this, so we're not so reliant on fossil fuels, and particularly those fuels we import from abroad. Oil, of course, is used mostly for transportation purposes. But eventually, as Peter says, maybe we can use other sources for transportation as well, including electricity-powered vehicles.
Yeah, and one of the arguments one of the points made in this discussion has generally been, well, right now, we don't really have any choice because there is not enough capacity on the alternative side to replace what we're producing with coal, natural gas, and nuclear. And so for the time being anyway, until we can figure out a better way to produce electricity, we're going to have to keep using these sources.
Yeah, correct. And for those who say, well, we ought to shut down our nuclear power plants because possibly there could be an accident like Japan. And there was some evidence in the St. Norbert poll that people would like to move away from nuclear power. The problem is it would take an awful lot of wind turbines to produce anything like what a nuclear plant would produce. I actually checked this morning, and Wisconsin currently has 314 wind turbines, produces 469 megawatts of electricity. One nuclear power plant of a modern type would produce 1,120 megawatts, so three times what all the current wind turbines in Wisconsin produce. So we have choices to make, and clearly supplementing our current sources with alternatives is great. But 85% of the energy we use comes from fossil fuels and another chunk from nuclear power. It's awfully hard to turn that around quickly. It's going to take a long time to do that.
Let's take another quick call from Ron in Menasha before the news, and we might have to get Professor Kraft's answer after that. Ron, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a place up in Tigard in a cabin that I'm building on, and I had geothermal heat put in last fall to Central Wisconsin Power Company. And after I got that in, I was talking to the guy that was putting it in. He told me that I wanted to put up a big windmill. And he said that I couldn't do it. It was against county ordinance there. And I thought, well, you know, I could be a little bit more self-efficient that way. And apparently the power company said I couldn't do it. And they had a meeting about 3 weeks ago up in Stevens Point. And I guess Fred Strasser was there. My neighbor was telling me, and I wanted to go there to listen to what was going on, but I couldn't make it because of work. But I was wondering what I can do about that. So I think I've looked at a big power line right across the road from me, and that's just as ugly as a windmill as far as I'm concerned. I just wonder what I can do about that.
Ron, hang on a second. Do you think that local governments should regulate windmills, or should that be a job for the state to take care of?
I think the state should take care of it, but apparently Central Wisconsin said that you can't do it.
Okay. All right, Professor Kraft?
Well, as you know, there's been a controversy over whether the state ought to set the rules for wind turbine locations and how far those turbines have to be from residential housing, and some prefer local control, and the state has been moving in the direction of a state regulation, and that's what the wind developers would like, because there are too many conflicting rules as you move from one local government to another, and obviously many people at the local level who fear new wind turbines too close to their homes are likely to show up and protest, and in some cases that has led to projects being terminated. As I say, that was one reason a major developer decided to pull out of the state, because of these kinds of conflicts. But as far as Ron's problem go, I would try to contact local government officials and see what the situation is, just to clarify what the rules are. And eventually we ought to probably have statewide rules that would clarify all of this.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break and catch up on the news, and then when we come back, we'll have more with Professor Kraft and your phone calls. If you're on the phone, please hang on through the news. We'll get to your calls as soon as we can when we come back. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7:36. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Joy will be back on Monday morning. We're talking about wind power and the results of that portion of the Wisconsin Public Radio St. Norbert College, Wisconsin survey, which asked how you feel about wind power. Appropriate that we're talking about alternative energy on Earth Day 2011. My guest, Michael Kraft, Professor of Public and Environmental Affairs at the UW Green Bay. We have an email from George in Ashland who asks, is offshore wind power generation safer for birds than on land wind power generation? Birds and harm to wildlife were the top concern, by the way, of people who were polled at 20% to 20%. And 36% said they see no potentially harmful effects associated with wind energy. But to George's question, is offshore wind power generation safer for birds than the on-land variety?
Well, not being a biologist, it would be hard for me to answer that question. I would think it would be more favorable to be offshore than on. What you want to avoid is placing the wind turbines directly in known flight paths for migratory birds or for local. And I think in each location in the state, we ought to be able to determine where birds are likely to be and to site the wind turbines so that they cause minimal damage. So that's been a longstanding concern about wind turbines, although more birds are killed through other means than wind turbines, particularly flying into buildings and windows. And the last time I saw a good study on this, household pets, cats in particular, take a greater toll on birds than wind turbines. So, once again, I put all this into perspective. We want to minimize kills to birds and bats and other wildlife, and wherever we put the turbines in certain land locations or offshore, certainly that ought to be a consideration.
Well, is there a certain element of NIMBY in all of this? I mean, anytime we do something like this, the person whose house or something is affected by it You know, none of us would probably choose to be in certain places. But there's always a certain degree of that anytime we talk about this issue.
Sure, and that's where the state versus local controls come in. If the control is local and a lot of people object to a major, not just one or two turbines, but a major wind farm coming in that might have dozens and dozens of wind turbines, they're concerned about the visual effects. They're concerned, in some cases, about what they believe are health effects or damage to the land. So certainly that, you know, people's concerns need to be taken into account. At the same time, we can have reasonable regulations to make sure any turbines are located well away from where people live. And that,
for those who've never seen one of these turbines, the blades on these things are 90 meters. That's if you take the largest jumbo jet that flies on this world. That would be bigger than the wingspan of that aircraft.
Yes, the blades are very long. The towers are very high. That is one advantage in putting them offshore. There's a major project that the federal government just approved, for example. It's called Cape Wind. It's off the Cape Cod in Massachusetts. And it's going to have 130 wind turbines producing about 420 megawatts. So that would be roughly that one project would be equivalent to all of the wind power that Wisconsin now has. And the federal government is talking about four other sites. These are all to be located miles offshore, so they will be less visible, and there'll be a new kind of design that can handle. That will be solidly offshore in Massachusetts. The water is fairly shallow, but still, you're talking about locating them offshore, and that comes about for some of these same kinds of concerns. And there's been a lot of protest in Massachusetts over that as well, for fear about navigation of ships and visibility. But I think what the St. Norbert College poll showed is that there's a very high degree of public support for moving toward alternative energy, and particularly wind turbines. And even the poll actually found that 69% were favorable to locating these facilities close to where people live. So I think we have to work out whatever conflicts there are, but I would not forget the larger public picture here, which is people are favorable towards wind and other renewable sources, and understand that we have to move in that direction and reduce our reliance on fossil fuels, and particularly on imported oil that's used for transportation purposes.
Let's go to the phones and take a call next from Jean in Germantown. Jean, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. I had heard that the wind turbines do decrease the value of property. And also, if you could comment on, if my neighbor had put up a turbine and I fall in the safety zone, it can affect what I can do on my property.
Well, I think it's hard to know what the effect on property values would be. I think part of the concern that people have, as I said, is aesthetic, or in some cases people worry about the light from wind turbine blades, and even are concerned about some health effects. I think if the turbines are located a reasonable distance from homes, they shouldn't have that much effect on property. Of course, these are not located in cities. These are largely on farm property where the owner of the land agrees in exchange for a payment to allow the facility to be located there. And state regulations would call for the turbines to be at least about 1,000 or 1,200 feet away from a home. And the governor has indicated a greater distance, about 1,800, which would be the most stringent regulation in the country. To the extent that property values is going to be decreased, I think property owners nearby could ask for some compensation from the developers of wind power. Does that answer the question, Jane?
Well, I don't think it's likely that the wind companies are going to compensate the property owners. I just can't.
My point is that they're already compensating the property owners in which they locate the turbines, and I think people who live nearby should be part of that decision. That is, if they believe their property values are going down, we could change state regulations that say nearby property owners need to be involved in these discussions and ought to be compensated at a reasonable level. But it's hard to know how much property values might decline, and we could have some economic studies that if we say, well, property is going to decline by 1 or 2 or 3%, that would be a basis for negotiation as part of the rules that we use for siting wind turbines.
I think, though, in Jean's case, she perhaps has some basis for suspicion. If you take a look at the case of what happens to property owners in the path of, say, a large power line, compensation rates there for the loss of property value have not been very good.
Well, as I say, this is a fairly technical question, but I think you can change the wind turbine siting rules to mandate that nearby property owners have a right to ask for fair compensation, and then it's a question of determining what fair compensation is. And a company that wants to build a large wind turbine farm would have to take into account whatever we determine to be a loss of property value. Clearly, the person on whose land the turbines are located is directly being compensated, and generally does pretty well. And that's the reason why people are willing to allow wind turbines to be placed on their property.
The Minnesota Power Company, which is up near where I live, has put in a few of these wind farms, and a couple of them are out in North Dakota. A lot of wide open spaces, a lot of breeze, and not very many people. So that's clearly one way to go. And my understanding is that the technology continues to improve. Each new generation of wind turbine develops more power, is more efficient, does a much better job of converting that energy into something that we can use.
Absolutely. In fact, that's an excellent point. I was going to try to inject that a little bit earlier. The people now are concerned about wind farms, multiple wind turbines, precisely because they're so big and obtrusive and produce some noise and may produce some lighting effects that are disturbing. But as with all other energy sources, if we invest more in the development of wind energy and alternative sources, we can find better technologies. I know there are some designs. I've seen photographs, sketches of them for much smaller wind turbines that would be more like a jet engine and would be much more efficient than the current generation. So, you know, we're working with current technology today as we are with automobiles and nuclear power plants. But if we think ahead 10 or 15 years, we could have a whole new generation of wind turbines that would be much less obtrusive and would not raise the kind of concerns that we see people naturally raising if they see a 300-foot, you know, massive turbine that's going to be located nearby, or worse from many perspectives, you know, 10 or 12 or 20 of them, which is why on the East Coast we're putting these offshore to avoid those kinds of effects. But development of new technology might help.
Yeah, and currently, I mean, the way the math works on these, as I understand it, an engineer tried to explain it to me once, and after about 5 minutes, my eyes glazed over. But as I understand it, the way the math works on these now is that the surface area of the blade, the amount of surface area, is really the limiting factor, or one of the two limiting factors, in how much energy a turbine can produce.
Yeah, well, as I say, there'll be, you know, new technologies might make a difference. It would be a radical redesign of the way wind turbines operate. But, of course, you need wind to have wind turbines work, and wind is not available 24 hours a day. And that's one reason around the country the first wind farms went into areas with pretty predictable wind, and which would make the turbines more efficient. But we can find areas in Wisconsin, particularly in southern Brown County, where one project was proposed and I guess is now dead, where you can have a more reliable supply of wind. And the offshore on the East Coast, again, that is one reason why the facility is being located there, because of the predictability of the wind.
All right. Well, speaking of winds, they're generally pretty light around the state this morning, except in Milwaukee and Madison, where I guess there's a little bit of a breeze. Of course, always plenty of hot air in Madison. Cloudy skies today across the Badger State. Grab an umbrella as you're headed out the door on your way to work or school today, because rain is likely everywhere. Possibly mixed with snow in the north this morning, a chance for thunderstorms in the south in the afternoon. Overcast all over Wisconsin today, 38 in Superior and Wausau, 39 in Oshkosh and Eau Claire and Milwaukee, 40 in Green Bay, 42 in La Crosse, and 43 in Madison. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7:48. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Coming up after 8 o'clock, of course, it's the Week in Review. From recounts to recalls, we'll tackle the top state and national news stories of the week. That's coming up next hour. This hour, we're talking about the results of the Wisconsin Public Radio St. Norbert College survey for spring 2011, which suggests that most of us are in favor of more wind power in Wisconsin as a means of getting us away from more traditional and less environmentally friendly forms of energy production. My guest is Michael Kraft, Professor of Public and Environmental Affairs at UW-Green Bay. Back to the phones we go, and we'll head to West Salem next and hear what Don has to say. Don, thanks for joining us.
Yes, hi. I saw some shows on National Geographic Channel where they would build smaller wind turbines that could be mounted on houses or public buildings and produce a smaller current and then tie it into the power lines to supplement the power use of the individual residents or the areas that they're being used. Also, I wondered about the possibility of using some of these turbines to produce hydrogen to use in cars. 70s-built carburetors that could be mounted on cars, that, allowing them to drive on either gasoline or hydrogen. And I wondered what the use of the power output from these wind turbines or these power farms would be to produce the hydrogen for this use.
Well, I think Don is correct in arguing that you could, assuming the cost was reasonable, you could certainly have a smaller wind turbine located in your yard, and I hope the new technologies would eventually permit that. It would be much like in sunnier climates, people would put a solar panel on their house. And I would say an alternative to producing hydrogen, well, any source of electricity could be used to produce hydrogen from water. A more efficient way might be to directly use the electricity coming from either a wind turbine or a solar panel to, say, power an electric vehicle. We already have the first 100% electric vehicle, the Nissan Leaf, on the market. We have plug-in hybrids, the Chevy Volt, and there will be many more coming in the next year or two. So people really want to stop relying on foreign oil, and here we're directly talking about importing oil to use as gasoline in our cars. If we produce electricity that could power our vehicles by plugging them in at night to recharge, and if the source of power is generated right in your own house or yard, that would clearly be a major improvement. Now, you'd have to take into account, of course, the cost of the turbine or the solar panels, and when that cost comes down enough, many people might find that a very attractive solution. Plus, as Don says, you can arrange to sell the power you produce back to the local utility through a relatively simple box. This is done all over the state of California already with solar panels.
Don, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Cindy in Forest. Hi, Cindy.
Good morning. First of all, address the fact that people call these windmills when they are in truth 500-foot-tall wind turbines of an industrial nature. And as a previous caller indicated that the technology does continue to improve, wind energy is still in its infancy. And before we can continue building wind farms and just putting them up in residential areas where the impact on wildlife and other areas could be compromised, we also have to look at the effect that it's going to have on humans. Recently, Senator Lestee did an interview with a gentleman in the Green Bay area that had to actually leave his home due to the effects on wind turbines. And we're not just talking about the visual effects. We're talking about the things that we cannot see or inherently hear. And I'd like to know how that is going to be addressed. Also, in regards to the Good Neighbor payments, what we're finding, because we are currently in battle for not putting up wind turbines in our town, as another caller actually indicated, that we've been told as well that if a wind turbine is near your property, you have about 600 feet where you will not be able to do anything without the wind energy company's approval, putting in a tree, putting in a shed, if it is too close in proximity to an existing turbine.
Well, I couldn't hear everything Cindy said because of the, it seemed to be a bad connection, but she clearly was, again, talking about the very large size of the current generation of wind turbines, and that is a good reason, a good source of the concern that people have about wind turbines being located close to their homes is because they are so big and not very attractive. And some people compare them to cell towers, but that actually would be quite a bit larger and more visible than cell phone towers. And so my hope is that new technology will produce a much smaller, more compact, more efficient, you know, wind turbines. But also on the question of people's fear about the companies that build these wind farms, as we call them, with multiple turbines, 8, 10, 12, 20 turbines, I would hope that whether it's a state siting process or a local siting process, that this, that the rules and the compensation and the process for adjudicating any disputes that arise between a homeowner and a neighbor or the city negotiating a contract would be open enough so that people can address all these concerns. It clearly is not fair if a wind turbine developer gets the permission to site and then there's no consideration of the impact on property owners or no way for them to appeal any decision that local government has made. But I, as a political scientist, I think there are certainly ways to design the siting processes and the laws and regulations to give adequate concern, adequate attention to people's concerns and find some way to reconcile these conflicts.
Cindy, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Jim in Green Bay. Jim, good morning. Thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
Thank you. Whenever I think of windmills, I think of Don Quixote. You know, I just can't get with the windmills. But I'd like to ask the professor a question. Why don't they make power plants smaller and more compact? This way they'd have more control over them. Say the size, I don't know if they can do that or not, but say the size of a railroad car or two railroad cars, and each city could have.
Jim, what kind of power plants are you talking about?
Well, the ones we got around Green Bay over here, nuclear.
Nuclear plants, okay.
Yeah, why can't they make them, say, a third smaller or half smaller, something where they could have more control over them,
yeah.
You know? I think that was one of the big problems they had with the Japanese, that with that earthquake, there was too many leaks. I'll hang up and listen to what you got to say.
Well, we only have about a minute left, Professor, so this will be our last comment.
Okay. First of all, there are several ways to have what you might call a modular power system. In California, there's some companies producing very compact fuel cells that would be much smaller than a railroad car, and they're intended for industries so they can generate their own electricity. So that's one technology that with a little bit of financial assistance might really take off. Then there are many proposals for a new generation of nuclear power plants, some of which call for very small modular plants as an alternative. I can't speak to whether those are more efficient, cost-effective. Generally, larger facilities can produce energy at a lower cost per unit of energy produced. But there, I would reiterate a point I made earlier. We need a lot of investment in new technology. We need a lot of sources of energy to choose from. We can certainly produce smaller facilities that are less objectionable to people, including, as I say, a new generation of wind turbines. And whether it's nuclear, fuel cell, coal, natural gas, we need to be thinking of the best technologies that can meet all of the needs that people have and also the kind of objections people are raising to wind turbines. I think those are all easily met objectives, and I'd like to see a real national dialogue on the direction and a state dialogue on the direction we ought to move in.
Well, I think we started that dialogue here today, that's
right,
for sure. Michael Kraft, thank you for joining me this morning. Appreciate your time today.
Sure.
Michael Kraft, Professor of Public and Environmental Affairs at UW-Green Bay. Earlier in the hour, Wendy Scattergood was on with us. She's Assistant Professor of Political Science and an analyst for the St. Norbert College Survey Center. This program was produced by Bill Martins, on-air production by Chris Molina. More on the St. Norbert College Survey coming up on Monday morning during the Joy Cardine program. And you can find the results of the survey on our website, WPR.org. Go to the program notes page. You can find it there and a link on the Joy Cardine Facebook program page. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.